Well, welcome to My Life in Football. And I'm so pleased to say that coming on this episode of the show is a good friend. He's one of the gentlemen that he was always a bit scared to approach when I first started football. But we get to know this gentleman, absolutely a complete superstar. And so a massive welcome to Justin. How are we, sir?
I'm fine. Thanks a lot, mate. Kind words. I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
No problems whatsoever. So I suppose, Justin, I suppose one of the first things is, I mean, as we said to some of the others that have been on, I mean, where did you first start off in football? I mean, where was your first start? Was it as a player? Was it as a manager or coach? Or where was your first steps into the game?
Well, I played football from a very early age, from the age of two up until 12, regularly. Youth football, obviously. And when I was about 12, I was playing for a club called Bancroft in East London, quite a big team at the time. And I got scouted by Arsenal and asked to come in on trial. Went down there, played an indoor game. And my manager sort of, at the time, to be fair, my mum and dad didn't really pay much attention to football. So I didn't really have someone to look up to or someone to guide me, really. So the manager, who, funny enough, is Jack Stevenson's dad. I don't know, Jack Stevenson, who played for Abbey, Bournemouth Abbey. Davey's name was. He was like my football dad. And he sort of didn't think it was the best decision for me to go to Arsenal and sort of said to us, look, you got time on your side, they're not really the best option for you. And funny enough, the year after that, I think I became a teenager and discovered ladies, so to speak. And I think I got distracted. As I said, I didn't really have parents that would steer me in the right direction. I worked from the age of 13, 14, so I was sort of the breadwinner for the family from an early age. So my path took a different way, really. I went to work and etc. And then, funny enough, I didn't really... Obviously, I watched football. I became a season ticket holder at Tottenham for about 4 or 5 years, but didn't really play it or have anything to do with it. And then I think I was about 19 years of age, 19, 20 years of age, in Leighton Orient. There was an opportunity to go work at Leighton Orient as a coach in the community. They said they'll put me on my level one and level two, etc., which they did. And yeah, I got the bug back. And then what happened was they used to do a programme on a Thursday with young men that came out of prisons and etc. And we used to just play a game to keep them occupied. And they were short of a player one day. And then my boss at the time said to me, would you be interested in playing? I was like, me? I've not played since I was a kid, really. And I borrowed a pair of boots. I was a centre mid when I was a kid, and I played a pair of boots, went right back, and I was just got the bug back for it, really. Then I started playing football again. I can't remember where I started playing for a team, but my memory serves me. I started playing for Bethnal Green United. We were playing low level football at the time. Then I went on to play for Eton Manor in the Essex Senior League, and then that's where I really stopped, really, in terms of playing football serious at Eton Manor. Then I went to Walthamstow Avenue, which was in the Middlesex County League, and I broke my leg, I think it was about 26, 27, and I was off work for 3 or 4 months, and I didn't think I was good enough anyway to get to the level where I wanted to. And the kind of person I am, if I can't be the best at it, then I'm not going to do it, really. So Bethnal Green offered me, as I said, I was at Walthamstow Avenue. It was a famous club back in the day, but they restarted that Walthamstow Avenue 2000, so to speak. And then the chairman, Newell, at Bethnal Green United said, why don't you come and be player manager? So I did that. In my first season, we won the Middlesex County Alex Smith Premier Division Cup, and runners-up in another cup. And then the following year, the chairman sat me down and said, look, I think you need to decide if you're going to play or manage. And I spoke to my family and I said, look, as I said, I want to be the best at it. I'm not going to get to the highest level I would have possibly got to, maybe the Ryman's League at the time or back to the senior league, and that's no good to me. So I decided to manage. And yeah, pretty much the rest of the history, I got into management. Well, funny enough, to be honest, when I was at Walthamstow Avenue, the manager left. We lost the game quite heavily, and the secretary said, will you manage the team on a temporary basis? There was about 8 games to go. They were practically relegated. And I just drafted in a few of my mates and kept them up. And that's where I got the bug for it. And I think that's when Norval Bethnal Green chairman said, I'll come and be player manager. And then going back to Bethnal Green, I think it was the 2008-09 season, where we won the league and won the cup and got promoted to the Essex Senior League. But going just back to that I always recall that as probably the springboard of my managerial career, really, that season in the Middlesex County Premier Division, because we were behind the team by like 10 points. They were called Parkside. I'm sure they were called Parkside. I don't know if it got anything to do with Park, the team that's in the Bosley League now, but anyway, we was about 10 points behind them before Christmas, and the only way to win the league, and only one went up at the time to get promoted to step five, was to win every single game. And we went on a run about 5, 10, 15 games, and we came up to playing them, and we had to win that game, and I'll never forget it. There was a lad called Nathan that played for me, and we was at Marlin Stadium, and he stepped up and scored a free kick in the 93rd minute to win the game 2-1. It was one of the best free kicks I've ever seen in my life, and we won the league. We went on to win the league and got promoted to Essex Senior League, which was a huge step from step 7 to step 5. And I loved the Essex Senior League at the time. I think we won Gordon Braston and the Essex Senior League Cup in our first season. And I think we finished about third, fourth in the league. And, I had good battles with Stansted at the time. I think us and Stansted were the best teams in the league. They picked up the league once or twice. And I had a very good team there where I managed to commit some of my mates that were playing in the Ryman Prems at the time and the Ryman North to come and play for me in the Essex Senior League. And we had a very, very good team. And yeah, I enjoyed that time. It was a very competitive league in the Essex Senior League. And then in my final season at Bethnal Green, we got to the quarterfinals of the FA Bars. And before we played the tie, Avery came in for me, approached me. I turned it down straight away because I had a dream that if I left, Bethnal Green would get to Wembley and I'd be the biggest regret in my life. Yeah. So I turned it down. And then we travelled up to Newcastle to play Dunstable. Stayed in the hotel. It was a great experience and we lost the game quite heavy, I think 4-2 or 3-1, I think, in front of a crowd of maybe about 600-700 people. Sky Sports was there. We got interviewed after the game. They came to our change rooms. And on the way up to the game, which was probably a bit, I wish it never happened that way, Craig contacted me on the coach on the way to the game and said to me, basically, if you lose the game, would you be interested in taking the job? And I said, in hindsight, yes, but I can't answer that question until we play the game.
Yeah.
And then, I sort of gave Craig my word if we lost the game that I would come and meet him the next day and practically accept the job. And we lost the game. I asked Dunstable if I could use their meeting boardroom. I pulled all the club because no one in the club knew, no chairman, no one on the players. And it was probably one of the hardest decisions I made in football because they were friends. There was people that was my friends outside of football before. You meet people through football and become your friends, but they were my friends before I brought them to Bethnal Green. And I got them all in the meeting room and just said, look, guys, I think this is the furthest I can take the club. We also failed in grand grading to get promoted. We were second in the league at the time with 3 games in hand and 6 points behind. We definitely would have won the league that season without a shadow of doubt. We had the best team in the league that season. And I just sat them down and said, look, I've given an opportunity to step up. Avery were practically relegated from the Ryman's Prem at the time. I think they just got rid of Craig Carl Griffiths.
Mm-hmm.
So, I said to them, look, I'm going to meet Avery tomorrow and I'm probably going to take the job. And I went and met Craig. I think it was on a Monday, if I'm not mistaken. On a Monday, I went to meet Craig because we came back from Newcastle Sunday evening. I think Monday afternoon, I went to meet Craig and Graham, agreed terms, and the remit was just to try and build a squad for the following season because they knew they were pretty relegated.
So what year was that, Justin? What year did you join?
2011. February 2011. That was. I'll never forget it. Yeah.
So good times, of course, at Bethnal Green. Going on to them, was that completely different standard of football from the Essex Senior League? Was it a big jump? I know some people say to me there's quite a big jump between the leagues in non-league, but was it a big jump
from Essex Senior League to Ryman's Prem?
Ryman's Prem to start with, yeah.
From the Middlesex County, Essex
yeah, Italy. Yeah. So from moving into Abley, was that a big jump for you?
Obviously, it was. It's two levels on paper, but didn't feel that it was a big jump for me personally, no, because my ambitions is still, and at the time was to manage as high as possible. So, no, I think I came in and done quite well. I don't think the team won any games in about 10 or 15 games. I think we got some good points and probably was, I'm not sure how many points, we probably about 5 or 6 points from staying up, if I'm not mistaken, and the club was buried, really. So it was I think that helped me to sort of get the support on my side and the fans on my side. And yeah, I enjoyed it, if I'm honest with you. I think my first game was Wingate and Finchley at home. We lost 2-1, last minute winner, they scored. Then we went to Lowestoft, and at Lowestoft at the time, I think they were playing in front of crowds of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. Mm-hmm. That was a big culture shock to me, if I'm honest with you, because I've gone from Bethnal Green, which at the time, to be fair to Bethnal Green, was 200 people was watching us at the Mylands Stadium, because we built a good fan base up there. And then when we went to, obviously, Avely, there was probably, maybe in the Rhymers Premier about 180, 200 as well. So going to Lowestoft on a Saturday, and yeah, when I saw their big stand, it was full, and it was quite a bit of a shock. But we lost the game 1-0, and the best that always stuck in my head, because the Lowestoft supporters, like I said, 3,000, 4,000, and clapped our players off the pitch. When I went into the clubhouse, I was quite overwhelmed, quite mobbed, if I'm honest with you, by a lot of the Lowestoft supporters saying, we played Avely a few weeks ago and they were embarrassing, and no disrespect to the people before, and they just said that, like, you're so unlucky. And yeah, so I think that sort of, I think that the chairman, Graham and Craig, probably felt, yes, we've hired the right man here, and looking forward to the following season. So yeah, like I said, that season they was practically relegated, and my remit was just to build for the following season, which I did, and obviously we got to the playoffs the following season. Yeah.
So what was looking from the outside in at Avely, and when you was at Avely, there was always that sort of real sort of big rivalry between you and Thurrock. Did you see that yourself as well when you were coming up to those sort of games? There was always seemed to be red cards, yellow cards, and God knows what else going on in those sort of games. But, I mean, were they massive battles for you?
Well, honestly, the truth is, the rivalry started between we played Avely in 4th at the time, and someone came up to me and said it's the first time Avery ever beaten them in their history, or ridiculous years, like 89 years or something. It was ridiculous. Basically, it was the first time that Avery had beaten them in probably as long as we've all been alive. And at the time, we had a good media team, and I was being interviewed at the other end of the ground, and I was one of the last to come off the pitch, all the players and etc. On their way to the change rooms, and by the time I came off the pitch after being given my media talk, I saw Craig Johnson and Dave Knight's father arguing. I just watched, and then I saw Mark Stimson got involved, and I'm not going to make no secret, he called Craig a nasty word, which I'm sure you've all heard, and I'm not going to repeat it on camera. And I just felt it was bang out of order, and I told Mark Stimson that, and that's how the rivalry started. Before that, I had no problem with Mark Stimson, and maybe because I was supporting Craig, that's how the rivalry started. Before that, there was no rivalry between me and any Thurrock players or Thurrock management. And from that day forward, there was animosity, really.
There were always games that you looked at and you thought, especially if you was involved when I was at that time with Harlow as well, and you sort of in the same sort of leagues as well, you're looking at those thinking, well, if we've got them in a couple of weeks' time, they might be, you know, some of their, this one might be missing, or that one might be missing, or whatever else, because you just never knew. But, I mean, was there any other big rivalries as well? You know, any stories or any rivalries that you can think of that with Avely that you enjoyed?
I enjoyed the Thurrock one because I've got a better record over them in terms of I've won more games than I've lost playing against them. So I enjoyed that rivalry. They said the Tilbury was wide, but I didn't really see it, if I'm honest with you. Another one was probably Heybridge, funny enough. There was never, and I think that's still continuing now, that sort of followed me really to wherever club I went. But yeah, I don't, apart from that, no, unless I'm missing something, no, I can't really think of anything. No, it was just Thurrock, really.
Was there games that you'd look forward to there yourself? Was this, you know, was was there games that you knew that, you know, you were coming up and you were playing this team and you knew full well that, you know, there was a manager there and you knew you could sort of get under their skin a little bit and whatever. And I know when we advertised the show through social media, I said Marmite, but it's that type of thing with yourself. One, you know, I think a lot of people don't see this side of you. A lot of people just see the side of Justin Gardner when he goes across the white line on a Saturday or a Tuesday night. And I mean, that sort of side of it. Did you sort of sometimes use that to your advantage with certain managers that you felt you could probably get the better of before you even step on the pitch?
Shadow of that, there's a few managers that I know when we're playing that I've beaten before we've even played them, because for whatever reasons I don't know what it is, but yeah, if you're asking me do I feel that some managers I beat them, it doesn't matter what team they put at, because of their manager they're going to lose the game. Yeah, without a shadow of doubt I do. I'm not going to reveal managing. But in terms of going back to your question saying I'm like mom, I agree with that, but anyone that's worked for me, worked with me, worked for me, players that played for me, or chairman, it's no coincidence that I'm close to every chairman that I've worked for. Mm. Going from Bethnal Green, even down to Wolverhampton, having his secretary still comes and sends me a happy Christmas, happy birthday every year. And he comes to watch our games once a year. Obviously, as I said, I'm close to Graham at Avely and Craig. I'm in constant conversation with Craig weekly. And obviously, Ken Campion's a friend of mine at Billericay, and obviously, I'm currently at Barking. So, I don't make no bones about it that when I'm on a football pitch, I'm horrible. And my wife's even told me that. My wife comes to watch me, and she doesn't like the person she sees on a football pitch. But I think it's my zone. As I said to someone, funny enough, a few years ago, a manager said to me, Justin, if you was a bit more nice and maybe buttered people up, in other words, be a brand noser, you'd probably be managing in the conference. And he's possibly right, but at the same time, I don't think I'll be the manager I am. Mm. So, as I said, win, lose or draw, there's no manager can say that I've not, even Mark Stimpson, I shake his hand after every game. He refuses, that's his choice, but win, lose or draw, there's no manager that you can interview that say I refuse to shake their hand or I'm a bad loser. Mm. But for 90 minutes, whether I'm playing against my family, I want to win, and I won't make no mistakes about it. And if I take that out of myself, I think I'll be a different manager, and probably not as good as someone as you.
No, dead right. I mean, games for Avely, then, as you started in that sort of first season, were there memorable games for you? Was there certain games that you played that were, you know, that always will stick in your memory?
There's a lot of games. Obviously, one game that stuck in my head, we went to Histon away in the FA Cup. And Histon, as you know, probably at the time was just on their way down from the conference. They got a couple of relegated a couple of leagues, and were still quite a big club, had big resources. And we went to their ground, underdogs, as you can imagine, and we won 5-0. And I'll never forget it. Chairman came up to me and said, probably the best result in East history since he's been chairman of the club. It was a great day. That season, we were one game away from being in the first round properly, which would have got us on TV. We lost to a team in Exeter. I can't remember the name of the team now. Solemn Town, last day of the season, secure our playoff place, even though we would have got it, whether we lost or not, in the 2012-2013 season. There's a lot of games. There's one game that stuck out. I got married in 2012. I said to my wife, after the wedding, we're going to go to the game in our suits, in our wedding dress. I got to the game 20 minutes late. We were 2-0 up against Brentwood at Avely. My wife, myself, my groomsmen, we all turned up at the game all suited and booted. And I think the players were gobsmacked, really, that I've turned up on my wedding day. And we won the game 3-0, and the players threw me up in the air in my wedding suit. I'll never forget that. That was a special moment. And, there's a lot of special moments at Avely. Look, I'm the longest-serving manager in their history. I'm well-liked by the fans. Not the new fans, because there's new fans. I know since the new stadium's been open, I'm talking about my time when I was there, post my time there. But, there's a lot of games. I'm probably missing a lot of games, and people will probably come and mention after that I've missed a lot of games. But what I do remember about that season when we got to the playoffs, we had a hashtag called Avely Family at the time, and it used to rally a lot of teams. I remember some players from opposition teams that were friends of mine said that their managers would stick it on the change room wall, or print a tweet that I've put out the week before the game. And yeah, it used to wind a lot of people up in their WhatsApp group and that, and we was a family. there's a video on YouTube that you can see that Scott Hakey did, and it was a special season, yeah. And as I said, we got to the playoff semi-finals, and funny enough, we lost to Terry Splaine's
But I mean, in that side of it, I mean, that they would be sort of like quite getting to that sort of semi-final and then losing, of course, to Terry in that game, as he mentioned in the last show. I mean, was that a high for you, or was that a big sort of low for you in that after that game? Was it high because you got there, or was it a low because you actually got beaten?
Oh, I was devastated. And fair play to Jody Brown at the time, came up to me and he just see, you know, he consulted me, and he said, "Look, it's I really appreciate it." He said some kind words that day. The funny thing about that semi-final is, and no disrespect to Morden, but we went 1-0 up, and Junior Pye got sent off after 30 minutes. And I believe if he didn't get sent off, we would have won the game. We was even a better team with 10 men. And there's videos to watch it. Everyone can see the game yourself and have their own opinion. But yeah, we went down to 10 men after 30 minutes in a playoff semi-final is against a Morden team that was strong, very, very strong. And we were strong, you know. We had the Dadsons, the Alex Reed, Jordan Cox, Jay Leaders, Pat Elby, Junior Pye, Danny Hopkins, Billy Holland. So we were strong. It upset me, because if we would have never met and lost, I probably wouldn't have been that upset and just been, okay, we lost to the better team. But obviously it don't sit well when you lose a man after 30 minutes. And to be fair, Morden targeted Junior Pye, which I don't blame them. If I could do that to a player, I'll do the same. Mm-hmm. They knew that it could get into his head, and it worked, really. Yeah.
But I mean, looking at some of the names you just reeled off there, and I know I've heard Craig say it, I've heard other people say it as well. I mean, if you would have managed, you know, to keep some of the players playing for you, you know, in the time that you was at Abley, you would have had some side there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but we had a budget of £700 a week, and that's what I just named you. That they all came in moving that £700, and I think the following season, about six or seven of them probably maybe got six or seven times more money elsewhere, and I could have blamed them.
Yeah.
The only one who stayed was Jay Leader, and not because he never had offers. I think if you ask Craig Johnson, even to this day, I don't think he's had more seven games from clubs than Jay Leader in the history of AD, if I'm honest with you. I don't think there was a week where Brent Pye, that club from all levels, didn't put 7 games from, but he was low. And in fact, I had to sort of tell him, look, you need to take the gun and sell some good money now, because I didn't care about players, and he was playing for me for peanuts. So, if we would have kept that side together, we would have walked into the front of the season, without a shadow of that. And that was a heartbreak, because I knew that those players, they wanted to get us promoted. So if we stuck together, but if we didn't, they were going to leave, because some of those fans were getting 30, 40 pounds a week.
Mm.
And, you know, we, those names, I'm sure you know that they're well paid now in the league. And rightly so, because they've gone on to, all those names I've named to you, have won many trophies after leaving Avery, and some of the best players in
non-league
right now.
So, I mean, with some of those players, the likes of, you know, the Dadsons and the Apires and Reed and etc. and Leaders, I mean, are you proud that they used to play for you and that you helped them along their way, and or are you disappointed that, you know, you'd love to have had them, you know, had them for a bit longer?
Well, obviously, I would like to have a bit longer, but I'm a realist. If a player's going to leave for an extra 50 quid or something like that, or double their money and the travelling's a bit further, yeah, it won't sit well with me. But some of the players I've just named you, they didn't have to work full time, some of the deals that they got, so I couldn't knock them. No, some of them, yes, I was a bit disappointed. So, funny enough, Junior Pye was the one, I think he stayed with us, I think, the following season, but left 2 or 3 months later to go Morden, funny enough. But there was a few that I felt made bad career choices at the time, but that's football's about opinions, and some have gone on to prove that they made great choices and some haven't, and that's football. I don't hold any grudges against none of them, no.
So was that sort of the playoff semi final? Was that the sort of the highlight of being at Abley, or was there other matches that came up, or other seasons that sort of were, you know, sort of was good as that, or level with that?
Yeah, that was obviously the high position we've been in. We overachieved every season, if I'm honest with you. I'll never forget my captain asking Craig, what do you expect Justin to achieve with that budget? And he said, fourth on bottom. So, well, we obviously broke that every single season. And, Like I said, I'm proud of what I achieved at AV with £700 a week budget. Listen, chairmen probably hate that I reveal their budgets, but I'm an honest person, and I think if everyone revealed their budget at the beginning of the season, you'll see who the best managers are in the league, really. Mm.
And I mean, are you sort of looking at the new ground at Parkside, wishing that you were still there and still sort of managing at Averley? When you see that ground?
Well, I don't regret it. It was my decision.
Yeah.
As I said, there was, in my 4.5 years there, I never had a fallout of anyone or anything like that, but there was just something that basically didn't sit well with me when I had a meeting. I couldn't look the players in the eyes, really, for the club. Well, basically, I can say a part of it, but they were going to cut the budget by £100, because if we would have gone out the bars the following week, and I just couldn't look at the players, really, who I left third in the league when I left Avery, and tell them that they got to take a pay cut. So, if I'm honest with you, I was going to leave Avery that summer. I had a few offers, but my assistant, Anton Stevenson, convinced me to stay. So, I think that was in the back of my mind, and probably... Did I make a hasty decision? Some say I did. Some said I should have maybe just saw it that season and then gone into the new stadium. But I went my heart on my sleeve. I don't like to have regrets in football, really. And like I said to you, Avery have gone. I'm doing good things now, and I wish them all the best. And I always look out for their result. But yeah, I don't have any regrets. Avery's a lovely club.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. You talk to people through this, and there's certain memories that you have of that person that sticks in your mind through non-league, and I haven't been in it as long as you. I've only been in it sort of 6 or 7 years, but there's, you know, you've memories of yourself, there's memories of Terry and so forth. And I think one of my biggest memories of yourself was a game against Harlow, and I think it was at the end of the game or just before the end of the game. I'm not sure if it was at the end of the game or you'd been sent to the stands, and I remember you coming across and the jacket going flying and going down the tunnel and so forth like that. But and they were sort of memories that I always remember of you. Do you know what I mean? Because you're so passionate about what you're saying and what you're doing on the pitch. You know, when you that always sits in my mind that somebody who's as passionate as that. You know, was really sort of like up for that sort of game against Harlow. But people like Harlow with that really sort of fanatical crowd behind you. How do you cope with that?
Well, actually, I never got sent off in that game. I was walking towards the tunnel because the manager of Harlow said he threatened me. And said, so I said, I'll see you in the tunnel. I never got sent off in that game.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if it was sent off or what it was. I remember you coming towards the tunnel, yeah.
Yeah, I went to the tunnel because I wanted to be there to see if he was going to... carry out his threat, really. It was all handbag then. We actually get on very well now. But yeah, that was it. He threatened me in the dugout, said something I didn't like, and as I said, I just said to him, I'll see you in the tunnel. Mm. And that was it, really. So I took off my blazer suit, as you saw at the time, and actually, that game, I was getting water bottles and chewing gum thrown at me from the Harlow fans at the time. So, and I think a steward came in and removed one of them, and I was getting a bit of stick from, as I said, Danny Chapman, and I just said to him, okay, well, back your talk up, really, go to the check. It was handbags, really. Yeah. We shook hands after.
But how do you cope with that? Because I would have thought people like yourself, you know, people like yourself and, you know, somebody like Jody as well, I mean, is, you know, and others. I mean, how do you cope as a man, should we say, and as a manager, how do you cope with that type of abuse, you know, no disrespects through, you know, from being there in the dugouts? And, of course, you know, as I've seen, even in the last couple of days, you know, you make a comment on, you know, on Facebook or on Twitter through your accounts, and people sort of jumping on you and abusing you through social media and abusing you in games. I mean, how do you cope with that? And especially with having a young family as well, if your young boy's there or whatever else, how do you sort of cope with that as a dad, as a manager, and as a man?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I've got no problem with fans giving sticks, as long as it doesn't cross the borderline.
Mm.
And the times that you've seen me, or people see me rallies, is because I think they've gone way over the line. Like I said, throwing things, I don't think that should happen. I'm a human being. Mm. If someone proves something to me in the street, I'm not going to accept it. So why should I accept it at a football ground? I've been racially abused at football grounds. That's something I won't stand for. I've had water thrown at me. But if someone's just telling me, giving me stick, like swearing at me and all that, that's part and parcel of the game. I don't retaliate for that. But as I said to you, I've been at, like I said, I don't even want to name the club, but two seasons ago, was at a away game and I was racially abused. And my six-year-old son said to me, Dad, why did the fan say to you to go back to where you come from? Now, how do I explain that to a five-year-old? So, yeah, they're the kind of things that I won't stomach. And I don't care that there's rules. If someone's going to racially abuse me or threaten me, I'm going to stick up for myself. And I won't change.
So is it games like that then that you can actually physically look at, and through your experience, you know if your young son wants to come with you and with your wife, is there some games that you look at and go, maybe don't bring him to this one?
Yeah, well, that's why my wife don't come to many games, because if anyone did take that to my wife, I probably wouldn't be responsible for what would happen, obviously. But yeah, my son comes here because he loves it. He plays for Barking Football Club. My oldest son used to come when I was all my clubs, so he loves it, and I won't stop him from coming. Of course not. And is there a game that, not really, because why should he be stopped from coming to a game? Because unless obviously that team, that club, I feel is going to be violent towards me that day, then maybe for his protection I might not bring him. But I've not felt that, like, no, it's just obviously the stick that you get, really. So, I've got no problem with fans giving sticks.
Yeah, no.
Said, don't cross the borderline. And one thing I don't like about football teams is when they beat you, they give you a stick. And I'll give you a perfect example. Hayward beat us earlier on in the season. We took it. We never retaliated. We went into the clubhouse, ate their food. We all stayed for an hour, had drinks, bought drinks from their bar. No problem. Hey, we beat Haybridge on Saturday. None of their supporters, but I think the vice chairman and a couple of players came into our bar. They all went straight home. The fans were giving us a stick through the tunnel. So where's the sportsmanship in that? If you give it, you've got to be able to take it. And that's the thing I don't like about football, really.
Yeah.
I give it. By no means, I give it. And I have to be willing to take it when I give it.
So, I mean, when you left Millfield and then you went on, I mean, what was the difference between going from Millfield, as you said, £700 a week budget, and then all of a sudden we're going to Billericay and probably not a £700 a week budget?
It's probably one player who was on £700. It was a whirlwind, if I'm honest with you. It did seem like reality. It did seem like it was another world, if I'm honest with you, but I loved every minute of it. Being joint manager with the chairman at the time, I loved every minute of it. And the only reason I left, if I'm all honest with you, is because Glenn didn't want me to leave. And I'm sure if you ever get to interview and you'll ask him, he never wanted me to leave. And the only reason I left is because I'm not saying I couldn't work with someone, but I feel like I have to have a final say, really, on team selections and things like that. And we were doing it together, and that was it, really. Like, there was nothing in it. And if I'm all honest with you, a lot of people said I shouldn't have left there, because if Glenn was, I was well looked after by Glenn in terms of me and Glenn are close now. He's a friend. And we still speak regularly. So, but again, like I said, I'm a football man, and I probably didn't like the celebrity side of it, if I'm honest with you. Which, don't get me wrong, if Glenn didn't do that, Billy Ricky wouldn't be nowhere where they are right now. And anyone that gives him stick, they ain't got a clue, because if Glenn could bottle up the media frenzy that he done to get Billy Ricky to where they are, he'll make a lot of money from that, because, as I said to you, Billy Ricky was probably having 200 people watching him before Glenn come in, and he's single-handedly getting a regular 1,200-1,300 people a week there. Yes, they've got good players, so people want to have a look at that, but it was his media. Well, some people think it was bad. I think it was the right thing to do, because it got all the newspapers interested. So, as I said, a lot of clubs could look at that, really. Maybe take the good parts from it. He held his hands up and said there were some parts that he didn't do right. But a lot of it, for me, it was spot on, because it got an interest.
And, of course, again, as you just said, you know, all the talk over social media, and there's millions and millions, weren't there, tweets going out all over the place, and the talk in non-league football was all Billericay. And, of course, that situation, of course, then provokes more and more interest, gets more and more into the public eye. And you've got to stand back and say you've done a, you know, an absolute brilliant job at it.
Look, I work with Glenn. Glenn wears garters and sleeves like me. He's the first to admit he's not a football coach. He's a manager of people, though, because that's how he's got his business to where it is. And if I'm honest with you, there's very few people that have inspired me in life, and he motivated me. Mm. And you probably don't. You look at me and probably think I don't need much motivating because that's probably one of my strengths. But he definitely motivated me, and that was one of his biggest strengths. He did motivate. But yeah, so he's a bit like me. Wears arts on his sleeve. We've both probably done things that we regret, but we probably wouldn't be the people we are if we changed.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember when you guys came in. It was yourself and Glenn, and I think Paul Konchesky came in, and Billy Bricknell came in to the show with me and Keith. And I remember we were setting up, and you guys were sitting on the table to the right of us and discussing who he was going to bring in and what money and all the rest of it. And sort of, I'm looking at Keith. Keith's looking at me, going, "Gee whiz!" And it was just absolutely mind blowing to actually sort of to hear some of the numbers. But But only in context of non-league football, not into context of sort of professional football, but into context of what, you know, some of these players are on in non-league football. But when you see those sort of players coming through, it must have been like a kid at Christmas, because it was almost, you could almost have whoever you wanted.
Yeah, well, look, I brought in a lot of good players then. And the ones that I did bring in were players that some of the lowest paid players. Obviously, Glenn brought in the Konchesky's, the O'Hara's and things like that. But, so, it was crazy. And some of them, he was telling me, look, we've got this money to go and get this strike. And I think, I didn't even have that as a weekly budget at Avery. But one thing Glenn said, which stuck with me, he said the reason why he felt he liked to pay over the odds is because he would demand so much from the person and they have to deliver. So that was his way of looking at it. Mm. He admitted that he paid over the odds, but he said if he paid people over the odds, then he demands much more from them, and they have to deliver. Mm. So, he wanted to get to where he wanted to get very quickly, so maybe that's how he looked at it. Like I said, you can't. I think I won the League Cup there as a manager. I won the under-23s. I was managing under-23s as well. So, I won two trophies there in less than half a season. So, for me, it was a good chance.
So was the League Cup the highlight for you, though?
Oh, yeah, because went to Carl Shorten, probably the best 4G we've ever played. Was it 9-1 or something? Yeah, 9-3 or something. I can't remember the score, but it was ridiculous. I think Billy Bricknell got an hat trick. But yeah, that was the highlight. And then obviously, funny enough, that day is when I think the R. Kelly song went viral, which I managed to slip out the changing room. Probably the best guy ever did, to be fair. But yeah, like I said, it was good times, and I wish Billy fans constantly messaging me, private messaging me on text or on Twitter, always saying we're looking out for your results, you're a passionate manager, and they love my management style and etc. And even the players, and Paul Konchesky is someone I still regularly speak to, and he actually enjoyed working under me. Mm.
So, I mean, you had, you know, over your time and that up to the Billy Rickey side of it, I mean, you've had, in my opinion, two of the best strikers, in sort of Reimer League or Bostic League, whichever you want, in Alex Reid and Billy Bricknell. I mean, if you could only take one of them, which one would you take?
I've had Jordan Cox as well. Jordan Cox, in my first season at Avery, was up there with one of them, but that's a tough call. I'd have to say Billy Bricknell.
Mm-hmm. Is he what everybody tells me? Sort of, he's almost like a beast when he's playing. He's, you know, he's one of those players that, you know, he's just, you know, different gravy to everybody else.
We had a young striker at Billy Rickey called Glody. He actually came to me in Barking my first season, and he said to me. I said to him, look, just watch Billy Bricknell, how he finds space in the box. And he said, Justin, I've learnt more than 2 weeks training with this boy than I've learnt my whole career playing with people. You can't teach it, if I'm honest with you. The space that he finds in the box, it amazes me, because he's not a player that's going to run past the centre-back for pace. And I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying that. I'll probably get a bit of stick with him for saying that. But you can't train that and read me. You just can't coach it. They just know where to be for the where the ball's going to land. You could do as many training sessions you want on that, but you can't. I personally don't think you can coach that. It's, you're born with that. You're 100% born with that, and that's the biggest thing. When I just see some of the goals Billy scores, it's just incredible because he just knows where to be, and he's promised me to play for me for a season before he retires, and I'll hold him to that.
So from the Billericay experience, then, I mean, where, you know, where, how did the barking job come about?
As I said, I was at Billericay, and Steve Willis and Glenn Goldby got Barking promoted from the Essex Senior League. Steve Willis has played for me for a number of years at different clubs, Bethnal Green and Averley, and he contacted me and said, look, if you don't come and manage the club, we're probably going to get relegated. So I said to him, look, I was being paid quite nicely at Billericay. So I said, you have to make it worth my while. And Willis managed to himself put a package together that he sort of sponsored, really, to get me to come in. And I made it clear to him that I wanted to work with Glenn Goldby. I didn't want it to be me as sole manager. And Willis said he would step down and just play. And that's what happened. And I actually enjoyed that, working with Glenn Goldby, because it was two people sharing the responsibilities. We both knew the strengths and weaknesses of each other, as Glenn Goldby played for me as well. When I was at Bethnal Green, so I enjoyed that very much. And then Glenn Goldby, due to, I think he had a little girl, a baby daughter, and commitment. Barking never trained when they was in Essex Senior League, believe it or not. So that's another achievement that they've done. They won a league without training. But we obviously, when I've come in, I've tried to make it more professional, and we've gone to training 2 days a week. And they just, Goldby just couldn't commit to that, so he stepped down and left. Yeah, obviously I took sole charge, really.
And it changed the Ryman North from when he was in it before?
It's much more money in it. Much more money. When in my first season in the Bostic North, and that was no disrespect to anyone, I knew we'd make the playoffs before the season even started. Now, yeah, like I said, the money in the league is frightening. There's people that are earning probably what I earn a week in my full-time job. Playing football in the Bostic North, training twice a week. So, that's the only difference, really. There's always been money in it, but like I said to you, in my first season, I think there was probably only three or four teams that had big money. The rest was probably on not too dissimilar, maybe a few hundred quid in it. But now, there's teams that are like fourth from bottom that I mean, we've got $3,000-$4,000 a week wages. So it's frightening, yeah. But I just probably been a Ricky never helped that, if I'm honest with you. I'll say that because the wages that Billy Ricky have got have obviously made players think they're worth more than what they are in terms of other players that have other clubs, so that didn't help, and I think that sort of shaped non-league up, really. And there's probably obviously more money in non-league, and there's more people that want to be successful, really.
The
4G pitches are obviously helping massively to generate income for these clubs as well, the clubs that have got them.
Are you for the pitches, or are you against them?
As a player, I'm against them. If I played, I wouldn't want to play on them. As a manager, it's the best decision that any club can make, because you get to train twice a week. You can choose your times when you want to train. You know your training's never going to be cancelled. You're not going to have a double booking. You're not going to be scrambling to find someone to train on a Tuesday. And you can get all your youth teams on it. I can get my 23s to train next to me so I can watch them. The income that it's going to generate. So it's a non-brainer for me, if I'm honest with you.
So, I mean... You were talking about the game at the weekend. I mean, you know, that's a fantastic result, you know, 4-1 against Heybridge Swifts. I mean, must have been really enjoyable for you to beat, you know, to put them. And I've probably broke quite a few people's bets, I would have thought, over the weekend, if they're allowed to.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not gonna lie about it. I did enjoy that victory, because I remember how they treated me when they beat us early in the season. So we did our homework on them. And I'll be honest with you, the conditions, I thought, would change that, because the conditions for both teams was, I'm sure you're able to get down Saturday, but I'm sure that if you went to watch a game, you saw the conditions on Saturday, it was a farce, really. If I had my way, the game wouldn't have played, because it just wasn't a level playing field for both teams. But then saying that, we've gone and scored four goals, able to score one goal, so for the spectators, it probably was a good day and value for money. But yeah, we did our homework, and I think we adapted to the conditions much better. And if I'm honest, we were stronger than him.
I mean, I always notice when fixtures come out normally Premier League fixtures come out and you look at them and you see like teams and you think, wow, they've got a really tough start to the season, or wow, they've got a really tough, you know, run into the season. And you've got the tough running in the season, haven't you? I mean, Struth. I mean, who pulled these fixtures out of the bag for you? You know, Heybridge Swifts last week, Bowers and Pitsy, Bury Town, Grays Athletic, then you got Mildenhall, Basildon, and then you finish with Averley and Morden.
Yeah. To be fair to you, you're right. I looked at those pictures a few weeks ago when, I'm not saying we were ever in danger of getting dragged into a relegation, but football's a funny old game, you never know. But I did look at them and I thought, Jesus, no one's really, the heavens ain't really praying for me, are they? But, it's funny, my record against the top teams is probably better than the teams at the bottom, which is strange. I've never put my finger on it. I don't think I prepare any different. I don't know if the players prepare any different, but, yeah, like I said, I looked at, you're right, after we beat Stone Town last year, I looked at our run and I thought, I think five of those teams in the playoffs, or four of those teams in the playoffs, Bury of six. Might be all fighting for their lives to stay in the league. So, on paper, and it's no disrespect, you probably think the one where we should be thinking we may get a chance of getting anything will be Basildon, really. But apart from that, then you wouldn't be surprised if we lost every single game on paper in terms of the team that we're playing against and their squads.
Mm.
But that probably goes our way for us. And so it gets us up for the game, you know.
Are you looking? I mean, is the Averley game on the 23rd? Looking at that one, and is that the first time you'll go back to Averley as a manager?
No, I played them twice last season, beat them twice already. So,
of course, you did, yeah. Sorry, yeah, of course, you did, yeah.
That wasn't. Mm. Yeah, we played them twice already, and we played them this season already at Averley and drew 1-1.
Mm.
So hopefully, my record of not losing to Averley continues. But listen, the strike force of Averley. Is any team in the league would like to have one of those.
Mm.
They've got four. Alex Afori, Freeman, Tom Richardson and Josan Sambanti.
Mm.
So it's frightening. But like I said, we're going to be looking forward to it. We've got a few ex-AV players that will be looking forward to it. And it's another game, but we won't think of that. We've got Bowers next week, the champions elect. And we'll just try to see if we can get something from them, but by no means... We don't stand a chance, really, on paper.
Mm. So, I mean, one of the things you've announced in the last week, of course, and it'd be wrong to, you know, to actually not mention it. I mean, you've got a new little business you've put together yourself. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, to be honest with you, it's something I should have done many years ago. A lot of people have told me, but I'm so focused on other things, and especially that Saturday football, that I didn't really look into it. But it's something I've been working on for the last probably 6 months. And I've got a business partner that we're going to do it together, a lady. So she will do the females, I'll do the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to see how it goes. I've had a bit of interest already. And I have a good record of working with young players, teenagers. So let's see if we can work with some even youngsters, even younger than that, 4-year-old up to 11-year-old, and see if I can turn them into future stars.
Mm. And as you said, you've got that sort of reputation of doing that anyway. So I mean, you know, there's got to be probably quite a lot of interest in it.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, I'm hoping that my record of work with young players, and not just that, if it was a parent, is that a son that's played for me and got a younger kid now, be like, oh, I wouldn't mind Justin going to coach my son. So I'm hoping to feed off that, really.
Mm. And I see your also as well family life. I mean, a young man doing really well in football as well.
He loves it. One thing he's got is he's got my passion for the game, which my oldest son unfortunately never had. He was technically very good and naturally gifted, but never really loved the game as much as I do. But my young son, yeah, he absolutely loves it. Sometimes, if I'm honest with you, I've had to learn from my oldest son, and I've had to stop him from playing as much football as he does, because I do feel at that age he's playing football 5 times a week, and sometimes I'm telling him it's too much. I think 3 to maybe 4 is probably enough at his age. So, like, yesterday, I told him he can't play football yesterday. He was upset, but he played football today. He's at West Ham tomorrow. But, yeah, he loved it. And as long as he enjoys it, and if he tells me, Dad, I don't want to go to football today, he doesn't go, I wouldn't force him. And, he just enjoys it. And I've said to him, every time he plays a game, or I say to him, how did you get on today? Do you enjoy it? And as long as he enjoys it, that's what I want him to do, because there's no guarantees in football. Yeah, I mean, as long as he's enjoying it and he's playing with a smile, that's all I want, really.
Mm. So, I mean, what's the remit then for next season? I mean, when do you start sort of planning for next season and knowing you'll want to be in the playoffs and getting promoted next season?
to be honest with you, my planning is sort of started, really, if I'm honest with you. I've been to one or two players and told them not to sign contracts and deals for their next club for next season and to sit down with me in the summer. But as honest with you, I think we've got the third best defence in the league. So my priority would be to keep those together, mm-hmm. which I feel I will, and to add the necessary quality where we need it, because our biggest downfall this season has been lack of goals, which is so unnormal for my teams. Every year my teams are one of the top goal scorers in the league. Now some people struggle with this season, it's back down to the finances. The finance have gone through the roof for me, just speaking to a striker, which I could have got in the past, but within the budget, they want 200, 250 a week, and I couldn't afford it. But next season, I'm hoping, when I sit down with the chairman in the summer, that the budget gets increased. And not just that, the quality service that we're going to have, I think we'll attract players anyway. It has done already. And we're quite a good catchment area. We're 5-10 minutes from London. We're in Essex. So I think after Haringey and Dulwich, I think we'll probably be the next best club for those Essex London-based players, really. Mm.
And are you looking at that? I mean, you look at the, you know, Barking, what is it, a couple of years now they've been out of the Essex League and that. I mean, you look at, you know, surely teams like Bowers and Pitsy, Haringey must be sort of like a bit of an inspiration for you, but for the whole club, you know, from what they've actually physically done. And what's to say that, you know, Barking won't be the next?
I think out of the four Bostic teams that we've got this season, three of them have got 3G pitches and they're all sitting top. Mm. So that's no coincidence. As you said, Haringey will be the inspiration because Haringey have gone from really nothing to they put their 3G down. I think they had a man and their dog watching them, but when they put the 3G down, their crowds have gone through the roof, which obviously generates income. So that will be something that we'll be looking to bring all the community, all the youth teams into one, under one hub. And being inspired by the Bowerses and the Harrogates. Yeah, without a shadow of that.
So I suppose one last question for you. What's the inspiration for you then? I mean, what's in the future for Justin Gardner? Is it, you know, I mean, are you looking to, you know, in I'm not saying next year or whatever, but are you looking to go into, you know, Vanarama sort of leagues and higher?
Yeah, without a shadow of doubt, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't aspire to be at those levels. And I think the biggest thing for me is to manage at the highest level possible. But also, you've got to choose the right chairman. Sometimes people go to jobs and it might look good on paper, but it's maybe cancerous behind the scenes. And I think I've been quite fortunate to pick the right jobs because I have turned down, especially at Avery, I turned down a number of jobs. And one thing I will say about the Barking chairman, apart from giving me a big budget, he does everything like next to none. He's bang on. He has a plan. He has a structure. He has goals where he wants to get the club to, and so far he's ticking every one of those boxes. And the only complaint and gripe I can have with him is that he doesn't give me a big budget. But hopefully that changes soon, really. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I really enjoyed working for Robert Barking and Mick O'Shea, who, like I said, we all want the same things. We want youth team players to come through to the first team. We currently have 5 players that have come through the system at Barking in the first team right now, which is tremendous because they don't have any other clubs on their CV. They're affiliated to the club and those players will be with us next year. So that means a lot to me, yeah.
Mm. Well, listen, Justin, it's a massive, you know, I was over the moon to say you accepted to come on the show and great to have a chat with you on, you know, and great to, for me, to let other people see that maybe the Justin Gardner they see on a Saturday isn't the Justin Gardner that everybody else knows. And it's fantastic to talk to you today. I wish you all the luck in the world with everything going forward with Barking and, of course, also in your own career as well going forward.
All right, thank you very much, David. And I really appreciate having me on. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
No worries at all, mate. Good night.
Take care.